Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome to this week's afternoon satsang. It's a beautiful Thursday, and even as we start this program, you hear a beautiful Guru Bhajan which is going on in the background. One of the special audios which are recorded for the 90th birthday season, and it's as new and as beautiful as ever. We offer our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And before we introduce this week's topic, and which is going to be a series in a sense, I invite Arvind, as always, to join me in this week's afternoon satsang. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem, and I'm very, very excited, I must say, because the topic that Bhagwan has inspired us to take up is something that is very close to not only my heart, I'm sure it'll be close to many of our listeners' hearts as well. And it is a subject on which Swami has dilated at length, exhaustively, on many occasions. And it is also beautiful because it is something that seems easy to practice. Actually, when we go into it, we will see that it is not as easy as it seems. But on the face of it, at least, it appears that this is something that any one of us can take up, any one of us can achieve. And I feel that in part stems from Bhagwan encouraging even the KG students, even the first standard students of the primary school, to take up this on one hand. And on the other hand, from the fact that there are so many stories, experiences and narratives in our, you know, in our scriptures, in our history, that shows that this is something that anybody, irrespective of caste, creed, race, stature in society, financial, financial might, irrespective of all this, anybody can take this up and succeed. So this is something that is very, very universal in its application, very attractive. You know, all these ashtakams and shatakams and different stotrams, they have a Phalashruti stanza. Basically, it states that those who do this will be getting this as a reward. And that is like an incentive to for a person to take up the chanting or singing of that ashtotram or satakam. In that sense, the incentives of this particular topic that we are dealing with is so immense, so beautiful, so wonderful. In fact, the incentive is the ultimate goal in life itself. And therefore, it is something that will be universal in its appeal. And I think not only we both, all our listeners and everyone who will be participating in the satsang, possibly over 10 weeks or 12 weeks, are sure to enjoy this and have a beautiful time.
So before we directly start telling the people what we're really going to talk about, maybe we'll play out a small discourse clip. And many of Swami's discourses had a reference to this particular topic we're going to start today. We'll play out this clip. Swami gives a small introduction and then sings a padyam which is so familiar to all of us. We've heard Swami's discourses over the years. And then we will take on the topic from where Swami lives. I think that'll be a perfect way to start the series. Let Swami introduce the topic for us today.
నిరంతరము కూడా మనము ఈ ప్రాకృతమైనటువంటి చింతలు ఏంటి, మన జీవితం వ్యర్థం గడపరాదు, వ్యర్థం చేయరాదు. వి షుడ్ నాట్ వేస్ట్ అవర్ లైఫ్ కంటిన్యూస్లీ థింకింగ్ ఆఫ్ ఓన్లీ దీస్ థింగ్స్ ఆఫ్ వరల్డ్ అండ్ నేచర్. ఇటు దైవత్వము పొందేటువంటి యొక్క మార్గము ఏడు విధములుగా, నవ విధములుగా బోధిస్తూ వచ్చారు. దేర్ ఆర్ నైన్ టైప్స్ అండ్ నైన్ పాత్స్ ఆఫ్ రీచింగ్ డివినిటీ. శ్రవణం, కీర్తనం, విష్ణు స్మరణం, పాదసేవనం, అర్చనం, వందనం, దాస్యం, స్నేహం, ఆత్మనివేదనం. దీస్ నైన్ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ డివోషన్ ఆర్ లిజనింగ్ టు ది గ్లోరీస్, సింగింగ్ ది గ్లోరీ ఆఫ్ ద లార్డ్, chanting the name and remembering the name of Vishnu, doing Pada Seva and massaging the feet of the Lord, worshipping the Lord, offering obeisance, serving the Lord, making friendship with the Lord and offering
ఒక్కొక్క మార్గమున
గమ్యమును చేరి ధన్యత చెందినటువంటి యొక్క వ్యక్తులు, మహాభక్తులు, గొప్ప చక్రవర్తులు. దేర్ ఆర్ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ డివోటీస్, ది ఎంపరర్స్ హూ హ్యావ్ ఫాలోడ్ ఈచ్ వన్ ఆఫ్ దీస్ పాత్స్ అండ్ రీచ్డ్ ది అల్టిమేట్ గోల్.
So I think it's very clear what we're going to talk about. That particular Padyam which Swami said, where he spoke about the nine types of devotion, nine forms of devotion, the Navaveda Bhakti as it is called in Sanskrit, is what we'll be talking about. And there are nine different paths, and each one of it is so deep that as we go into it, you'll see that each one is so profound and so detailed. And in many discourses, Swami would give specific examples. You know, there are many, many people who would probably fit into these categories as devotees devoted to this particular path of devotion. But Swami would give specific examples for each one of these. And it would be wonderful to look at the lives of these devotees and understand these paths.
You know, when we speak of the Navaveda Bhakti Marga, I am reminded of the small shrine. It's not actually very small, it's quite a big shrine itself that has been built for Shirdi Baba, a kind of a Nandanavana that is built near our general hospital.
Right.
Over there in the center is this Navaveda Bhakti Marga. You know, the central altar, apart from Shirdi Baba, has these nine terms. Mm-hmm. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam, Sakhyam or Sneham.
Okay.
So, when you look at these nine terms, they are arranged on a kind of staircase. And the lowest step is Shravanam, the next step is Kirtanam, the next step is Vishnu Smaranam. Leading up, finally it's Atmanivedanam or complete offering, complete surrender to the Lord. And that is like reaching the ultimate. So what I wanted to say was, when you look at a thing like that, or even other times when we hear some people dilating on this, it often appears as though this is a kind of a stairway, a staircase, where, you know, Shravanam or listening is, you know, it can happen involuntarily. Passing by and there are two people discussing about Swami and I happen to listen, that's also Shravanam. I heard about some good things. So Shravanam seems to be the easiest. All you have to do is, you know, you just put on Radio Sai, you hear Swami's discourse. But the next one, Kirtanam, that is singing the Lord's glory, is a little tougher because it involves effort from your side. You have to sing. At least you have to technically, theoretically know the words, know the tune. Even though you may not be a good singer, it takes some kind of effort to do Kirtanam. But I can do, you know, I can sing along, like, you know, when I'm riding a bike, I just sing some tunes, hum some tunes. It might not possibly be out of devotion to the Lord. It might just be that I like the tune. So therefore, though Kirtanam seems to be more effort than Shravanam, the third one, that is Vishnu Smaranam, thinking of the Lord, is one step above, it appears. Because I'm not only singing or thinking, I'm also thinking about the Lord. It's not like I'm humming a tune when I'm riding a bike, as I said. I'm doing it with conscious effort. The conscious effort is not only in my singing, but also in the feeling and thinking of it. So that way, if you see, it goes on building up like a staircase. And Atmanivedanam, which means complete self-sacrifice, self-offering. You offer your, there is no more existence of you as an individual self. That definitely appears like moksha or the ultimate. So, there is this confusion that might come in anybody whether this Navaveda Bhakti Marga, because Navaveda means nine types or nine modes. It doesn't specify whether these are nine independent paths, each one capable of delivering you to the ultimate, or whether these are nine steps in a progression where you move from one to the other before reaching the ultimate step of Atmanivedanam. I think we should spend some time and try to resolve this before we go into the individual paths.
Absolutely. You know, one thing which what comes to my mind even as you are talking about this, I think it's right to see it both ways. Because when you say path, you talk about it as a gateway. You know, you talk about it as a stage. It could either be a stage or it could be a path you take. You know, you could have nine paths. You don't have to go through every path. It's like each of these paths lead to the same goal. So when you say a path, you talk about which one do you choose. You have 9 options here, you choose one. But if you look at it, each one of these can also be spoken of as an expression of devotion. Somebody who is really devoted, who's got a very, very pure form of devotion, how does he choose to express his devotion to the Lord? You know, it could be one who is probably so fascinated about the Lord's stories, and he would just be sitting somewhere and listening. He doesn't speak at all. He just keeps listening. His devotion might express in that way, right? Or there might be somebody who cannot stop singing, you know, is all the time singing. So when you talk about expression, you're talking about probably a gradual increase going up to Atmanivedanam. In fact, the way I would like to see it is probably, as you said, Shravanam is something which requires least involvement. Because many times when you speak to old devotees, they would come and tell you, you know, we were walking down a lane in Bangalore, we heard bhajans, you know, the bhajans were very melodious, we went and sat there, we didn't know about Swami. They come to know about Swami like that. Because Shravanam or hearing is something which can come with least volition of yours, with least involvement of yours. You could accidentally even hear about Swami. You'll have many devotees who say that we heard about Swami and he appeared so Christ-like. His miracles were so Christ-like. We were so drawn to him. So that is one stage where you have least involvement. You could even accidentally come in contact with the Lord. But Kirtanam, as you said, you know, I've heard about it. Kirtanam is not just singing. You know, when we go into that particular path altogether, we might go into the detail. But Kirti actually means fame.
Glorifying.
Glory. So when you hear about the glory, and now you say, you know, I'm so filled with it, I want to share it with somebody. So where you take that little more initiative and say that, let me also talk about him, let me also sing about him.
So it may not be just singing, it can be about talking, right. it can be writing.
Writing, sharing. The whole idea is like, I'm so full of it, it just expresses, I can't contain it anymore. And that again seems to be, you need an audience for that, right? When you say Kirtanam, you know, I have somebody who doesn't know, let me go and tell him, or let me go and tell her. There is a certain society which doesn't know, let me go and share. But Vishnu Smaranam or Smaranam, as you said, was, you know, something more internal, where even if there is nobody, you kind of are thinking about the Lord, because you're so filled with love for him that you don't need an audience to speak to, or you don't need a medium to listen. You just keep thinking, because you're so filled with him. And then, of course,
Pada Sevanam
is, I would look at it as service. Like, you know, at some point you say that, yeah, I love Swami, but what is the point in simply sitting? I need to express it. Let me go out and serve somebody. That's why Swami said, you know, those who go and alleviate the suffering of the poor.
Dinadukhiyon se prem karo, mera sahi
prasan
hoga.
Right, so you realize that, you know, there is no point in simply sitting, listening, talking and thinking, I need to act. You know, this devotion has to express itself in action. That's why I said, when you see it as expression, you see a progression. You see that one is a little more profound than the previous one. One is a little more expressive than the previous one. So Vishnu's Pada Sevanam. And then you come to Vandanam, where I think for one of the dramas we had written it in that way. Where, you know, you might be a CEO. You might be a president of a country. You might be a head of a state. But you know that when you come into a temple, you bow down. You know, when you come in Swami's presence, you become like a child. So Vandanam is like, I have my achievements, but in front of the Lord, I'm just a little child like anybody else. That feeling of humility which comes spontaneously. You know, I might be the one who is feeding 1 million people every year, but in front of the Lord, I'm a, you know, very humble person.
Yes, the feeder and the one who is fed bow down equally.
When you start seeing yourself only as an instrument, that humility comes so spontaneously. I feel that is Vandanam. And Swami would beautifully say that, you know, this is again a point which probably needs to be mentioned. According to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and most of the texts, it is always Archanam and then Vandanam. But Swami would always say Vandanam and then Archanam.
Only in this clip that we played, Swami put Archanam before Vandanam.
Right. Usually, if you see most of Swami's discourses, it is Vandanam and Archanam. And Swami explains why also in some of the discourses.
He says,
Vandanam is when you just, you know, as I said, I'm a great person, but when I come in front of the Lord, I bow down. But Archanam is whatever I have achieved, I offer it to you. So you see a little more closeness in that. You know, it is not like I just respect Swami, but I do everything for Swami. You can see a leap in the attitude. You know, as a devotee, how that changes. And that
and
is,
of course, that leads to dasyam, where right. you don't even feel that I need to offer anything because I am a servant. I have not
right,
achieved
you're doing
anything.
It everything as a duty.
Huh.
Right? You're not saying that I am coming and offering it to you. You're saying I'm doing it as a duty.
This
I'm,
is the
I'm
Lord's
a slave
command.
Of huh. the Lord, right? And then when you come to friendship, then you see a sudden leap in your relationship between you and the Lord. You know, till now you're only talking about you being a subordinate, you being a lower one. For the first time you're saying, I can see eye to eye with the Lord, I'm equal with the Lord. Because you're talking about friendship.
And friendship is always between equals.
Right, friendship is, as Swami said, friendship is always between equals. And then, as Swami says, Atma Nivedanam is a point where you say that, you know, equals also means duality. There is no equals, there is only unity, there is only one. So when you speak of expression, you can see a progression over there.
You know, when you were speaking about this friendship, I was just reminded, this is also the sports meet season, a time when almost all the students will be practicing for the march past. I remember that they used to use one quote that Bhagwan uses mm-hmm. often in order to help us even in the march past.
Okay.
They would tell, remember what Swami says, don't walk ahead of me, I may not follow you. Don't walk behind me, I might not lead you. Walk by my side, be my friend. So, you know, when the march past squads come marching up to the Shanti Vedika and then they do the Daaye Dekh, eyes right. So they would always say, keep this dictum of Swami in mind with respect to each other also.
Mm-hmm.
Don't walk ahead of the other. Don't walk behind of the other. Ensure that you're walking side by side in line as a, you know, as,
right.
so they would,
as a friend. Walking.
Yeah, so this thing of sakhyam or sneham would often be used even in the sports ground. And you know, if I'm allowed a little digression, what a beautiful thing it is, you know, Prem, I feel this march past, because it came in that sense,
mm-hmm.
It's done for every sports meet year after year, and it occupies the prime position on the 11th of January. It is the first item when everyone is fresh and fine. Before anything can start, the march past is done for about 35 to 40 minutes. And the amazing thing is, Swami, when he was physically there, he would watch the march past more than any other item. And this is something that is done every year. I mean, you would wonder, what is it, Swami? What is so fascinating about the march past for you? In fact, you must remember, I'm sure you remember that Swami comes to the ground, a march past is done.
Right.
Then they have a second round of march past. And Swami sits and sees that also. In practice session, you see march past. Then finally, you see march past. It almost used to be a thing of a mystery, you know, for me as to, Swami, what? It's so boring, actually. They're just walking across. What is it that you see in that? I'm sure our listeners, if they have not read, they should read this article on march past that was published last year during the sports meet. I don't know what's the name, why march past in front of Sai or something like that. I think even if we Google these words with the term Radio Sai, this article throws up. It's amazing. It gives a student's perspective as to what's so amazing about the march past.
Actually, I think it's a conversation with one of the old students who's now in the Air Force.
Uh-huh.
Who comes every year almost for the sports meet
to train
just
the students.
To train the students in march past.
Oh, fantastic.
And, you know, his understanding of why Swami gives so much importance to march past, why march past itself is given so much importance in the army, and you know, how it is applicable to our disciplined lives in the hostel. It's very true, right?
So, when Swami was himself asked, you know, this question mm-hmm. at one point in time, as to Swami, why the march past? Is it not the same march past every year? Swami had responded beautifully saying that the students are different every year. So for Swami, it's not about the same march past, but about the different students who go through this march past, which is very important. And I feel it's not a coincidence that, you know, Swami would become almost alert sitting on the edge of his chair when the students come to the dais and do Daaye Dekh. Daaye Dekh translates as eyes right.
Right.
I feel that is what Swami does in our life also. He wants to ensure that our eyes are right. You know, our eyes look onto the right side always, because Swami says that samyak drishti or good vision is one of the first few steps that we can take in the spiritual journey. Samyak drishti is very important. Then samyak vak, samyak hearing, Swami speaks. So, and I feel that also gives us a hint as to how do we know our eyes are right. If your eyes are right, you must be able to see Bhagwan. You must be able to see Swami. And I feel this is relevant to today's topic, because before we delve into the Navavidha Bhakti Marga, we should get ourselves acquainted with what is this beautiful thing called Bhakti. And I feel one nice explanation that we can have, one nice definition based on the sports meet is, when your eyes are right and you see God, that is one way of defining bhakti.
Right, and even as you're talking about the sports meet, we are in the season, and probably that's why we're having these overtones about the sports meet. But I mean, even as you're saying this, it just strikes me that how beautiful this entire event is, because in many ways it gives us an opportunity to express all these nine forms of devotion. You know, when you talk about the army, I remember we used to have one of the generals from the army who used to come, and he used to send trainers for us, and every now and then he himself would come. And I mean, it's a big thing because he was the general of the Northern Command. He was one of the top three people in the Indian army. And he would come and see our march pass, and he would come and tell us, you know, this is how you should march. The trainers would be aghast seeing that. You know, my God, I mean, he's the general. The trainers would tell us, you know, I don't know about Swami. Swami might be God for you, but I got to shake hands with the general. You know, I'll be treated royally when I go back to my contingent. That's how big a man he is. And he would say, you know, see, I've been in the army for so many years. All these soldiers have been, and they do the best march past in the country. And they get to salute the president. You guys get to salute Swami. You guys get to, you know, give guard of honor to Swami. You march along with Swami. You're giving a chance, I mean, whether you acknowledge it or not, you are for that moment being Swami's army. You know, I belong to Swami. We are, you know, that Dasya Bhakti. It's an opportunity to express that. It's so strong at that moment. Of course, the point of offering to Swami and doing it, the whole sports meet is all about that. You talk about friendship. You know, how many times we might have come up with events which never got to see the light of the day. You know, where you never see Swami probably gets up and goes away sometimes. But the kind of understanding which is there is no heartburns there, you know. Probably you...
At least no permanent heartburns. Temporarily you
might
feel a little
low. Temporarily you might be a little dejected, but then you say that after all you're doing it for Swami, and if Swami doesn't want to see it, you know, that kind of understanding only can be explained through friendship. You know, when we did a satsang on friendship and we said, you know, we want Swami to understand us, and only we express the same kind of understanding, there's a friendship. Otherwise we're only expecting from Swami without giving anything from our end. So in many ways, even as we're saying it, it strikes me sports meet is a beautiful location where Swami gives an opportunity to express all these different types of devotions.
You know, Prem, we dilated at quite a length on how the expression of devotion makes this like a progression.
Right.
But actually, if we look at the example that Bhagwan has quoted in his discourses, we have devotees who have achieved the ultimate.
Absolutely.
Via Shravanam. Who have achieved the ultimate via Kirtanam, who have achieved the ultimate via Vishnu Smaranam, and so on. So, in that perspective, when we view, we realize that each of these paths, when followed in the right spirit and in the right manner in which they are supposed to be followed, that also Bhagwan has dilated on at length for each one of us. And that is what we realize, that if they are followed in that manner, each path actually leads to the same goal. It's not as if somebody, you know, I feel we should not minimize it in a crazy manner and say that a person singing bhajans is greater than a person listening to bhajans.
Absolutely.
A person who closes his eyes and does namasmaranam or smaranam is greater than a person who is singing a bhajan. I think those will be ridiculous derivations that we will be making. Because each of these paths has the capacity, that is why it is called Nava Vida Bhakti, nine types, nine modes of devotion. Actually, in the traditional manner in which they are classified, the Nava Vida Bhakti comes as a sub-classification of bhakti itself. And bhakti figures among the four different paths. One is Jnana Marga, one is Karma Marga, one is Bhakti Marga, and then the Raja Marga. Of course, under bhakti, these are classified as the different modes in which bhakti can be expressed and achieved. So in that sense also, it shows that each one of these modes is capable of delivering you to the ultimate.
Absolutely. You know, it's in many ways Swami speaks about this Navavida Bhakti and of course bhakti. Many times when we see these debates, I often come across these debates between theists and atheists. Where atheists talk about, you know, where you've never seen a God, how do you believe in somebody, how do you have faith, where is the question of devotion? When you're listening to the arguments, you know, technically some things are running in your mind. You're trying to give reasons. But at some point you stop and say that I mean, I don't need these reasons. I have after all seen Swami. No, you've lived, you are living, and you know that there is a divine presence. I mean, you don't need any other reasoning than that. I think in that way we all are so fortunate. And even as you were telling that probably we need an introduction about bhakti, we need to remind ourselves that the topic requires an introduction. Because we so much take it for granted that all of us know what is devotion, all of us know bhakti. And it's a blessing in a sense that we don't need to be tutored on devotion. It's become so spontaneous for us. We know that, you know, it's the basis for everything for us. Even if I'm going to take up the study of Advaita, it's based on bhakti, because Swami speaks so much on Advaita, let me read about Advaita. It's become like that. So bhakti becomes a basis of, as you said, karma, jnana, and any other path which you take up, bhakti becomes the basis, at least for Swami's devotees.
Definitely, Prem. In fact, let me narrate my own personal experience. Actually, it is two of them. One is an experience, the other is something that I heard from Brother Sai Prakash.
Okay.
The experience was, as soon as I became a student, I heard Swami narrate a Chinna Katha in a discourse. He narrated the story of two great saints.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Gyandev and Namdev. I don't know if it is Gyaneshwar, but Gyandev and Namdev. And as their names represent, one is a Bhakti Margi, the other is a Gyana Margi. So they are both walking through the forest, they are very tired, weary and very thirsty, and they come across a well. So they are thankful to God for the well, and now the water in the well is very deep, it's not at the surface. So Gyandev is a master, he is, as his name suggests, he has all the jnana, all the wisdom. So using his mastery of knowledge, he transforms himself into a bird, flies into the well, mm-hmm. drinks water and comes, and his thirst is slaked.
Right.
And then Swami went on to narrate, what did Namdev do? He just closed his eyes and thought of Hari, he thought of his Lord. And the water in the well rose up to the level till the top where he could drink, you know. Right. Swami stopped with this narration, and when I heard this, what I felt in my heart is, Swami, when we have the wisdom, you see, what happens is, when Jnandev went as a bird, he slaked his thirst. What I felt is, because of Namdev, any future traveler who is coming that way now will be able to get water, because it's there till the top of the well. So see, God's solution is so much more universal, it's so much more beneficial to many, and therefore it is much superior to our own wisdom. When I heard this, I really felt, Swami, I would rather prefer to have devotion towards you than wisdom, because in wisdom I might be able to solve my problems, but with devotion, unknown to me, I will be actually solving problems for so many others. It felt so inspiring, so beautiful, and it felt wonderful to depend on Lord rather than yourself. And just, I forget the exact discourse, just the discourse that I was reading, in that Swami speaks about two kinds of bhakti also. Mm-hmm. You know, he says there are two kinds of bhakti, and though he does not explicitly state what is the second kind, he clearly states that the first kind is the bhakti that comes from jnana and enquiry. He okay. says that is the devotion that comes when you have wisdom which is derived from inquiry and the Jnandev type, I assume.
Okay.
So he says the problem with this is, it is very individualistic. And later on, though he doesn't explicitly state the second type of bhakti, he says, in the other kind of bhakti, everyone gets involved. It becomes community. And after that, Swami goes on to speak about bhajans and sankirtanam. So, putting these two together, I really feel, when we have this kind of dependence, it becomes so beautiful, because not only is our needs taken care of, the world at large is also taken care of, because the Lord's wisdom is more supreme. Theoretically also, you know, there are bhakti, they have classified it as two types actually. One is called Markata Kishora Nyaya, one is called Marjala Kishora Nyaya.
Right.
Meaning one like that of a baby monkey, which is the jnani types, one that of a baby kitten, kitten is a baby cat. So it is said that a jnani, like the little monkey, has to hold on. We see the little monkey holding on to the mother monkey. And then not worrying, because the mother monkey will take where I need to go. But I need to hold on. Because if the baby monkey lets go, it's going to fall. It's going to fall from great heights. But in the case of the kitten, it's not like that. The mother cat And when I say cat, I'm referring to even tigers, lions, all the cat family. They have jaws which can rip apart an animal. But the same jaws are gently held, are used to gently hold the baby and transport it. That is that kind of, the kitten does not have to worry at all. You know, the kitten is helpless, eyes are closed, and just sits there and the mother transports it wherever it needs to. The same mother who is able to rip apart, it reminds me of Narasimha and Prahlada, you know, who could tear apart Hiranyakashipu is now fondling Prahlada. So, based on this, you know, and of course that Sai Prakash, what is that reference I made was an exhibition in which somebody had made the three margas, karma, bhakti, jnana. Mm-hmm. And karma marga was represented with a bullock cart, bhakti marga with a comfortable car, and jnana marga with an aeroplane to indicate that it's the fastest. And Sai Prakash said that Swami remarked, the aeroplane might be the fastest, but remember, falling from the plane, there is no chance of survival at all. So in that sense, also it felt as if car is the best way, you know, because the fall is also not so dangerous. It is decently fast, also not as slow as the bullock cart. So even in that sense, it felt like bhakti is the most beautiful, most enjoyable, most wonderful way. At least that is what I felt. And therefore, right from my early student days, I've always felt that bhakti is the best way to reach our Bhagwan.
Right. And in a sense, what I would say is, even as you're speaking about the different types of bhakti, the type of the baby monkey, the kitten and all that, you know, one thing which is very obvious, even when you speak about the nine types of devotion, is there are so many combinations possible. You know, the combinations which are possible with these many types of devotion is so many millions. And it is not really for us to say that this is how I want to be. You know, you can be inspired and be probably I might wake up today and say, I want to become a jnani today. But if that is not the path which my insides really, you know, choose, it's not possible. That's one thing which I've come to see. For instance, let's say that I want to be like that kitten and have that kind of devotion. But as long as I have a very active reasoning mind, I will always keep asking, Swami, why did you do this? Why did you say that? It'll take a lot of effort for me to say that, no, I have to stop this. You know, probably that might define my path, but it's not that, you know, this is the best way.
Correct.
This is the right way.
Absolutely.
I think that is the beauty about this whole thing of bhakti. And you're talking about two types of categorization. There is another place where Swami says three types of categorization, that, you know, ananya bhakti, ekanta bhakti and something. And there's another place where Swami says samanya bhakti and ananya bhakti and something else. There's so many different ways of doing it, but the beauty is, one way I feel how jnana and bhakti, maybe where bhakti gets a little bit of edge, where you see it. For instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that when you do something, the best way to do it is when you're able to do it without an eye on the goal. Okay, let's say that that is an axiom we have accepted. You do it without expecting the result. And Swami says that whether you're a devotee or you're a jnani or you're a karma yogi, whatever it is, the ultimate what you'll reach is the same jnana. It's not like there's a different jnana for the devotee, there's a different jnana for the jnani yogi. The ultimate state which you'll reach is the same. The same oneness is what you're going to reach. But in bhakti, you get to do this of, you know, not looking for the goal. Because in bhakti, you're not at all thinking about the oneness. You're all the time thinking, you know, how do I please the Lord? What do I do to please Him? What do I do to offer to Him? How should I live my life so that He is pleased? So you're removing that idea of oneness, which is the goal or which is the result of this whole path, from the equation at all. So you end up doing thing like how, you know, Krishna told Arjuna to do. You do it with utmost sincerity in the path with no idea about the result which will come. And the result will definitely come.
And you know, Prem, as you said, it is definitely not totally an individual's choice. It depends on one's own liking. And that's why such a variety is offered, I feel. Whether even in bhakti also, see, first of all, to feel that bhakti is the best way for you, it's absolutely the way the individual's preferences are, and those preferences are shaped over lifetimes of karma.
Right.
So to choose bhakti over jnana or karma itself is a thing. In bhakti also, which of these paths, shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu smaranam, because each one of them are equally potent. Again, it is determined by your own tendencies and, you know, your past karmas, all that. But still, you know, because as I said, I feel attracted towards bhakti and I feel it so beautiful. One reason why I feel, you know, trying to find logic in bhakti, one reason I find bhakti so beautiful is, I found as a child was, you know, I noticed that I am a very, very emotional person. And I have very strong likes and very strong dislikes. And therefore, I have very strong attachments. And when you have strong attachments, you can realize how much pain will be there when the attachment ceases. Whether it is an object, a material object. Like, you know, I'm also attached to things like my own phone, my computer. I never discard my t-shirts, though they have become 12-year-old, 13-year-old, because I have memories associated with them. You know, that kind of reeking attachment guy I am, you know. Same thing happens with people. And so when people go out of my life because of different reasons, whether it is friends or colleagues, it leaves a mark on me because I'm so attached. So as a person who has this tendency to get attached, to have strong likes, to have strong desires, I found bhakti was a way where these things, you know, these things which are actually my negatives could become my positives if only I use them towards Swami. I have a tendency to get strongly attached. That's actually a weakness in every sense. But bhakti gave me an opportunity where if I turn this towards Swami, it becomes a greatest asset of mine. It becomes a great strength of mine. You know, when I miss something or somebody, tears automatically come in my eyes. That's my weakness. But if I replace that something or somebody with Swami, it becomes my greatest strength. It becomes like I'm shedding tears for Swami, and I have noticed in my life, every time I have shed tears for Swami, it has strengthened me, it has cleansed me, it has made me feel so beautiful. In fact, I remember one small picture that recently somebody shared on Facebook. And I loved it so much because I felt that is so apt for me. That is what I have discovered in my life. It said, when bhakti comes with, and when bhakti enters food, food becomes prasadam. When bhakti comes in hunger, hunger becomes a fast. When bhakti comes in water, water becomes tirtham. When bhakti comes in travel, the travel becomes a pilgrimage. When bhakti comes in music, music becomes kirtanam. Bhakti comes into your house, your home becomes a temple. When bhakti comes into your work becomes worship. And when bhakti enters a man, he becomes human, they said. But I felt when bhakti comes into man, he becomes Hanuman. I just felt, you know, because that is what bhakti does. And I noticed that in my life, all my weaknesses in an instant got transformed into my strengths once bhakti came in. And that's why I personally am so enamored and touched by this path, the path of devotion or bhakti.
Absolutely. I think for most of us, especially when we ask, you know, which form of bhakti is good? Tell me, don't tell me all the other things. Which is the best? I think it's nothing more than our expression of laziness. Tell me which is the fastest one. You know, you have three, bhakti, jnana, karma. Which is the fastest? Which is the easiest? But, I mean, as you said and as we were talking about, it's very clear that I think each one of these paths actually chooses you based on your vasanas, based on your likes and dislikes. For instance, I've come across some people who really don't like to take responsibility in the sense of, you know, carry a burden of, I made this choice. You know, I did this decision and these are the repercussions, I have to manage it. For them, it's so easy to get into a mode of surrender. You know, not that laziness really, but they want a certain
aptitude.
Yeah, they want a certain relationship with God by saying that, you know, Swami, I'll do whatever is right according to my understanding. The rest is yours. Whatever comes, I take it. It comes so spontaneously. What sometimes it's very difficult for people like us. You know, we are always trying to do the right thing and we are so obsessed with, even in our path of devotion, you know. Oh, Swami does not like this. Oh God, how did I do this? You know, curse yourself. But there's some people, they say, yeah, I made a mistake. Swami, I mean, it's up to you to make me do the right thing. That kind of laziness also probably comes in built in when you are that sort of a person. Surrender becomes easy. So I think that is why bhakti is so multifaceted, so very, you know, different types and permutations and combinations are possible. So each one who is listening to us will probably have a completely different combination. and a different approach for different circumstances. But one thing common is, of course, whichever form you have chosen to worship, a pure sense of love towards that form. I think that's the most common thing. Dear listeners, we'll take a break now. And today, Arvind, I was thinking that even as we play out a song, we just concluded a song festival which we had for the 90th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
We had beautiful entries coming, I think about 70, 80 entries, coming in different languages. Portuguese, there was one in Russian. We had from Australia, we had from India, we had so many entries from the US, from Dubai. So we thought, why not we play a few of those songs? So dear listeners, we're going to play one of those songs now. This was sent by a few devotees from Australia. From their voices, it sounds like they're youth from Australia. A beautiful English song that they've recorded. Don't go away. On the other side of the song, we'll continue our discussion on the Navayutu Bhakti.
Time after time I'm getting knocked to the ground. There's no joy to be found. Life is beating me down.
Don't understand, I have it all in my hands. What's missing, what do I need?
I've searched and searched for something God only knows. I wait and I pray and I wonder. Within me, it says my child. I know that you're here, your love's all around me.
Just like a water drop that falls from the sky, there's no difference, no distance between you and I.
I've searched enough and now it's time to go home. Let your love be ingrained in my memory.
In the world of
Welcome back, dear listeners. We had had a discussion on the Navavidha Bhakti, the 9 modes of devotion, and also a little discussion on bhakti itself, on devotion. Taking it further, Prem, you know, in all the definitions of bhakti, one thing that is very common and one thing that is very evident and that is the basic premise for bhakti is that it is love. In fact, in our discourse, Swami says, Vatsalyam is the love between a mother and a child. And there are like that, there are different loves. And he says the most beautiful among all the love is bhakti, which is the love between a devotee and the Lord. So, bhakti, I feel the most universal and best definition should be that bhakti is love for God. Love is the root. And in bhakti, love is also the root, R-O-U-T-E, root. because, you know, I remember in a discourse where Swami says, love in thought and words is satya, truth. Love in action is dharma. Love in feelings is shanti. And love in understanding is ahimsa. So, 4 out of the 5 pillars of satya, dharma, shanti, prema, ahimsa, we realize that are actually an extrapolation of a single pillar itself. Everything is based on love. And love actually expresses as satya, dharma, shanti, prema and ahimsa. And therefore, this universal and single aspect of love, directing that towards God, that is bhakti. And I feel this is the best possible definition for bhakti.
That particular definition which you spoke about, you know, love in words is satya, love in, it's very, very important, because I remember in one discourse Swami saying very emphatically, you know, the reason why we have atheists today is because of the behavior of the devotees. It's because of the behavior of those who claim to be believers of God. You know, if your love does not express itself as satya and dharma, I mean, you're just cheating yourself, you're just cheating the people around, and that there's a sense of disgust with, you know, what is the point of having bhakti if you are not even leading the life of a good man? You know, if you're able to cheat another person and you claim that I'm a devotee, I go to a temple, I do seva, I do bhajans, I do nagar sankirtan, what is the point? I think that is why that quote which Swami said is so profound, that if your devotion does not express itself as love, kindness and righteousness, then there is no point. Because when you look at it, whether you choose love as a root, as you said, or you choose love as a tool, you choose bhakti as a tool, the state you're trying to reach is the same. You're trying to reach a state of absolute purity which was embodied by Swami. And you can choose any, in fact, talking about the state of purity, you know, there's a discourse in the Samukhoses where Swami speaks about the mind. You know, there's a discourse called The Vagaries of the Mind. Samasha was 1990. There Swami speaks about 3 types of flaws in the mind. He calls it Mala, Vikshepa and Avarna.
Malar, Vikshepa, Avarna. Avarna. Okay.
And Swami in that compares the mind with a mirror. Swami says the mind is like the mirror. And if you talk of Mala as the first thing, it is like the dust which collects on the mirror. When there is a coating of dust on the mirror, you can't see your reflection. So that is one flaw. And Swami says that dust is all these vasanas that you collect over lifetimes. I like this, I don't like this, I'm scared of this, you know, I'm a little selfish, I'm a little jealous by nature. All these are like that dust which collects. Vikshepa is the wavering nature of the mind. You know, if you have a mirror which is all the time shaking, you can't see yourself clearly in that. It's no use to stand in front of it and dress. So Swami says Vikshepa is that kind of a wavering nature of the mind. And Avarna is the worst. If you put a cloth over the mirror,
you can't see it at all.
And Swami says that is Ahankara. When you have false identification of yourself, then there's no point. All your references are wrong. You know, if you think that you're the body, all your references, all your understanding about yourself, your nature is completely wrong. And talking about that, Swami says, for this wavering nature of the mind, Swami says the best way to steady your mind, the best way to deal with this wavering is the Navavidha Bhakti. Swami says all you do about listening. And that's why each of this will have a certain amount of sitting down and, you know, certain amount of focus, which will need a lot of your mind focus involved in it.
You know, as you said, that devotion is, I'm using devotion in the place of bhakti. So bhakti or devotion is the best way to overcome these three problems of the mind, malar, vikshepa and avarna, as Bhagwan has said it in the discourse. Thinking of that, I feel that bhakti is not something so difficult, not so tough, because every one of us at some point or the other in our life, you know, we would have experienced devotion to God. We would have experienced bhakti. So, in that sense, it appears as though bhakti is not such a tough path. In fact, that is also one of the incentives why everyone, at least the majority, feels that bhakti is better than karma or jnana. Because bhakti is so easy, it doesn't require much effort also, it appears as though. Because, you know, we often confuse bhakti with emotion also. So, since it's easy to feel that emotion, we feel bhakti is easy. But what we have to keep in mind is, getting bhakti, experiencing bhakti now and then is fantastic. But Shirdi Baba always says, along with Shraddha has to come Saburi. Along with devotion has to come this perseverance, the continuity. It should not be part-time devotion. In fact, to a few students, I think Bhagwan had also said this, that, you know, in an organization or a company, there are two kinds of employees. One is a part-time employees.
I think to the MBA boy, Swami had mentioned this, talking about
example.
The pay structure and...
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So he had said there are the part-time devotees and there are the full-time part-time employees and the full-time employees. The part-time employees get only certain benefits, their wages or whatever. The full-time employees, apart from their wages, get health insurance possibly, they get their PF, the provident fund,
right.
They get gratuity, they get so many other perks and benefits, simply because they are full-time employees.
And even pension.
Exactly, pension. A pension is something that relieves you of all your tension, that is what it is, because it is earning that you receive past your working years. So, Bhagwan said, just like a full-time employee gets so many more benefits compared to a part-time employee, so too is this with devotion. Full-time devotion will get you benefits that are, you know, that are disproportionately higher than what part-time devotion will get you. It's not as if 50% devotion and 100% devotion, if you have, 100% devotion gets you double of 50% devotion. 100% devotion gets you many, many multiples over part-time devotion. In fact, Bhagwan says a full-time devotee wins God's grace, and God's grace is like an insurance which will help you at your time of need beyond your measure.
No cap.
There's no cap on it. That is the kind of thing. So, you see, the benefits are immense. So, even if one is selfish, because it is said that selflessness is absolutely essential for love. But I am thinking logically, even if you are selfish, you would opt for a full-time devotion rather than part-time devotion.
Very true. And what does it take for that full-time devotion? You know, what is the difference to ask ourselves whether we are right now full-time devotees or not? What does it take?
Hmm.
I mean, I spoke about that one particular vagary of the mind. Swami says devotion helps in attaining that. It's even the other way. Your devotion is not complete if you don't have stability of the mind. In many ways, for your devotion to be deep, for your devotion to be comprehensive and complete, you need that kind of stability of the mind. You know, I always used to think of this imagery when sitting in mandir. Let's say Swami comes and Swami tells you, why are you sitting here? Go and sit there. Swami would many times do that, you know, go and sit in that side or come in the front row. It's very easy. We just get up and go and sit there. Or Swami would tell that, you know, stop doing this from henceforth. You know, there would be some boys who would clap their hands very vigorously doing bhajans. And one day Swami would call them and reprimand them. And Swami say, you know, keep it simple. Don't be so expressive. So that boy would, from the next day, change his ways. We can do this because we have a certain amount of control over our body. Swami says, sit, I can sit. Swami says, stand, I can stand. But if Swami comes and says, don't be jealous from tomorrow, I can do that only when I have control over my mind and my thoughts.
Exactly.
When Swami says, have only pure thoughts, entertain only good thoughts, I can't do that not because I don't have devotion, because I don't have control over my mind. So for my devotion to be complete, whether I like it or not, whether I am a meditator or not, I'll have to find some means by which I can get more control over my mind, by which I can steady or silence my mind more.
Absolutely, you know, that's a very, very valid point you make, and that's why I thought we should also clarify that when it is said full-time devotion and not part-time devotion,
not like you come and join Radio Sai.
It's not about the quantity of time.
Right, exactly. It's not like we are full-time devotees. That's why with confidence none of us can say.
Exactly. It's not at all about quantity. It's about quality. How many times have we heard Swami exhorting that a teaspoon of cow milk is better than barrels full of donkey milk? In fact, Swami also narrates the story of, the sage Narada, the celestial sage Narada, who keeps wandering all the three worlds, chanting the name of Hari. For everything he says, Narayana, Narayana. That is his style. That is his...
Persona, right?
Yeah, persona. So, the story goes that Narada once went to Lord Vishnu and asked, Lord, who is your greatest devotee? And he had no doubt that he would be named, because 24 hours he is thinking of the Lord. But to his surprise, Vishnu names a farmer on earth as his greatest devotee. So Narada does not contest that. He decides to go and observe the farmer. What is this farmer doing that makes him the dearest devotee to the Lord? Over me also. What is he doing that is greater than what I am doing? I am going around the world talking only about the Lord, spreading the Lord's name, spreading the Lord's message and thinking only about the Lord. He goes and sees that this farmer gets up early in the morning. As soon as he gets up, the first thing he does is he thinks of the Lord. He thanks Narayana. He thinks of the Lord. He says, okay, good. Well begun is half done. After that, he sets about his work. And Narada notices that though the farmer works very hard, he barely thinks of God during the work. Then he comes home for lunch. During the lunch, before partaking in lunch, he again thinks of the Lord. And thanks the Lord for the food, everything. And then again sets out for work. Again no thinking of the Lord at all. Finally, he comes back home again, has his dinner, and before going to bed, he again thinks of the Lord, thanks the Lord, and goes to bed. And Narada says, this guy thinks of the Lord only 3 times a day. And the Lord feels that is superior to me. I am thinking of him always. He feels this is some mistake or some grave injustice, so he goes and complains to Narayana. And Narayana says, oh, okay, so this is your doubt. Fine. Now, forget that for a while, Narada. I have one important task, which I want someone very special to do. Are you ready to do that? Now, Narada is very thrilled. He forgets all about the farmer, because among the special people, Lord Vishnu is thinking of him. He says, Lord, what is the task? Tell me. I'll be ready to do. Your wish is my command. He says, nothing, Narada. Here is a pot of oil. I want you to carry this pot of oil when you go around the three worlds. Just carry it and come back. But you see, for some reason, I have filled it to the brim. To the top. I don't want even one drop of this oil to fall. Can you do that for me? Says, Lord, for your sake, I'll do it definitely. And then Narada picks up the vessel and he's all attention and focus, because not a drop of oil has to fall. And to his credit, at the end of his journey around the three worlds, he has succeeded to carry the pot without dropping even one drop. With great joy, he comes and tells Narayana, Lord, I complete the task you have given. And you can see Narada is very fatigued. He is having sweat. But there is a smile of satisfaction, because he has done the Lord's job perfectly. Then Narayana says, now tell me, Narada, how many times during this journey did you think or did you take my name? Now Narada is stunned, because when he thinks of it, he was so focused on the task at hand that he never thought of Vishnu or Narayana even once. He says, Lord, I was doing your work. I didn't feel the need, like I need to take your name separately again. He says, see, Narada, that is the feeling that matters. The farmer there also, he feels he's doing my work. And yet, when he's doing my work also, in the middle of it, he's able to take aside time, pull aside some time and think of me at least thrice a day. You couldn't do it even once. That is the reason, Narada, why I say that farmer is the dearest one to me. So this is a story that Bhagwan narrated in his discourse. And it clearly shows that when we say full-time devotion, it's not about the number of times we take up Lord's name. I have seen people, they carry a Japamala Of course, there are many people to whom Swami himself has given a Japamala. I am not against the use of Japamala, but some of them have a modern Japamala. You know what it is? It's like a counter. Every time you chant a mantra or take the Lord's name, you click on it. It counts. So they say we want to offer a million names to the Lord. My innocent query really is, why offer a million? Just offer whatever you can. If it is half a million, that's enough. If it's 2 million, it's fine. Why do you want to keep a count of how much you offered? The Lord has a... If the Lord wants a count, He will maintain the count. So, it is not about the number. It is, when I say full-time devotion, it's not about the number of hours, number of days, number of years, or number of times I do for the Lord. But it's the quality of that what is done. Just as Swami would give the example of Rukmini. She picked up a tulsi leaf. And one, she said, Krishna Arpanamastu, and kept. That was enough. That was enough to beat all the gold of Satyabhama. So it's not as if Rukmini had to offer 2 trees full of tulsi leaves. Just one leaf. The intensity of feeling at that one moment matters. And in that sense, we mean full-time devotion. Because when we offer, let it be with a full heart. Let it be complete without any kind of, dust or contamination. That is full-time devotion, not the number of hours or the number of times.
Absolutely. I think the difference is very, very, very subtle, and it can be very easily missed out. And in that way, as Swami would say, if you put a bundle of sandalwood on a donkey, you might see that, you might think that, you know, a donkey, you're so lucky you're carrying sandalwood. But the donkey, it's a burden, right? So many times I feel if you're not living the role of a devotee, a tag like Sai Devotee could be a burden. I mean, you might be really misusing it, you might be really completely out of place carrying it around. Because, you know, I mean, I can talk for myself. When I came to Swami, why did we all decide to stay back? Why did we all choose to be in Puttaparthi? See, we thought that this is the best that could happen to us. This is the best that could happen to me, to be around Swami, to be with Swami. There is a very strong amount of selfishness, which is not wrong. You know, you made the most wisest choice in that given point of time. But is that choice changing to, you know, now what does Swami want? When that question comes, and when that question becomes the most important question in every step in your life, I think that is when really that shift between part-time devotee to full-time devotee comes. Now, there's no point, as you said, you know, there's a gratuity, there's a pension. If I'm going to be a full-time devotee and all the time thinking and calculating, what is the gratuity I'm going to get now? You know, am I getting that benefit? Am I getting that casual leave which I was supposed to get? Am I getting this? If all the time we are seeing, is Swami doing His part of the deal, right? You know, which means we are still in that state of, you know, am I getting the treatment which I signed up for? At some point, it is only love for love's sake. You know, I'm devoted to Swami. As Swami, that beautiful example that you alluded to, where that farmer was saying that, you know, I'm doing this duty, but Lord, at the end of the day, I'm doing it for You. When you can do it without the idea of what am I going to get at the end of it, what is the security I'm getting at the end of it, what is the insurance cover I'm getting at the end of it. I do it because it gives me joy, it gives me love, it gives me so much satisfaction doing it for Swami. I think maybe at least for that moment, you may become a full-time devotee.
Exactly. And Prem, this point that you said, I must confess that, you know, technically, theoretically, I knew that when I'm choosing the Lord, everything automatically will be conferred on me, you know. I need not worry about anything else. Somehow, my mother built it into me as when I was a child, and later on also experiencing Swami, I knew that this is Narayana. You know, why go for Lakshmi? Lakshmi stands for all the world and Narayana is the Lord. Lakshmi is at Narayana's feet. So theoretically I knew this. But you know, still Prem, it would feel that, but Swami, this is there. You know, this problem is coming up. What about this? What about that? Let me tell you, it is not as if life has been a smooth ride in that sense. And I don't say that that is because of Swami. Life has not been a smooth ride because I have not been a full-time devotee, Prem. Because as you said, like an employee who keeps thinking about the provident fund, about the gratuity, is not actually a good employee in that sense. I've also not been, because I've been thinking that, Swami, if I choose you, I'm supposed to get everything. Now, why is this problem coming up? What is this happening? Why, Swami? But you know, Prem, I actually, when I think of it, I get off tears in my eyes, because I feel, though I have not been a good employee, though I have not been a full-time devotee, I can cross my heart and say that every single problem, it's not as if the problem has not come. It has come. But it has always come with His love and His assurance. And at the correct time, in the proper circumstance, it has got resolved in a manner beyond my wildest dreams and imaginations. And it has got resolved in a manner where I feel that this is not the first time it's happening. It has happened hundreds of times where I have tears in my eyes thinking, Swami, what is this happening? I make it a point never to ask Swami why, because I feel if I ask why, I come one step lower in my devotion. So I have told Swami I won't ask you why, but you know, I make other shortcuts. I say, Swami, what is this happening? Swami, give me the strength, Swami, and I do all this. I realize that I need not do any of that, because His love is so much. He has ensured that every single time I have cried, within days or weeks or possibly months, I have sat back crying, this time with tears of joy, saying, Swami, what is it that you do? Why do you love me so much? That is the Lord. And I feel that is the beauty of this bhakti, that though a full-time devotion gives you so much, even if we are not able to hit full-time devotion, even if we are able to touch the bhav of bhakti, it is enough. Because our Lord is so compassionate, so encouraging. It is so beautiful that your own experience, your own journey will teach you that bhakti is such a blissful, such a comfortable, such a peaceful way of life.
And what I feel, you know, from all that we've discussed, all that you've said right now, I might be completely wrong. Each one of us, if you see, as Swami would say, we are a complex of three, the body, the mind, and the Atma. Atma, we have no idea what, I don't know when that's going to come by, other than what Swami has told us. And even what Swami has told us only goes till the level of the mind. I don't know what happens in the Atma level. So what we have in our disposition is the mind and the body. And I think as devotees, it's very important, I mean, when we talk about full-time devotion, part-time devotion, as devotee, I think it calls for each one of us to stop and say, if I say I love Swami, what does that really mean? What should that really express itself as? In the level of the body, in the level of the mind. You know, that is the only way that devotion can seek completeness. And when we talk about the nine types of devotion, that's what we're going to do. When you say Shravanam, when you say Kirtanam, when you say Vishnu Smaranam, each one of this, where will you take it to the completion? You know, is it just simply sitting and listening? Or is it just that, you know, when I walk home, there is a tea shop which is going to play a bhajan. I'm just going to listen to that bhajan every time I walk past it. Is that alone Shravanam? Or is it taking it any further? What does Swami talk about? Shravanam, taking it to the last lap. You talk about Dasyam. Where does Dasyam start? Where does it attain its completion? I think in devotion, each one of us have to stop. And as long as the mind is there, probably when the mind ceases to exist, that's the whole idea. But I think as long as reasoning is there, can we stop and keep asking ourselves, Swami, what do I mean by loving you? What do I mean by I have devotion to you? I have a situation, I'm having a problem. Just as you said, you know, we are not going to run out of problems. Problems are always going to come. But when we have a problem, can we stop and use all our reasoning and thinking and memory and recollect and think and stop and wonder, Swami, I am a devotee. You know, I have a problem, I have a situation. What am I supposed to do? How should my devotion to you express itself today, at this moment, at this situation? I think that is something which probably all of us can start doing, try doing every moment.
Absolutely, Prem. You know, in this context, that is why I feel bhakti is inevitably tied to surrender. You know, and first of all, we have to understand what surrender means. We have had this discussion in satsang before also. Surrender, in short, Swami says, means whatever happens to you in your life, you should be able to thank God for it and say, this is for my best, I know, Swami, and thank you for it. Whether it's a victory or defeat, whether it's a profit or whether it's a loss. You should be able to feel gratitude for it, irrespective of what it is. And why should that gratitude come? Because Swami says that whatever the Lord does for you is for your good. So whatever it is happening, in your opinion it might be bad or good, it is definitely for your good. Because the Lord is choosing it for you. And therefore, when it is for your good, why should you feel bad? When somebody does good to you, you express your gratitude to them. So, if you are really convinced that God is doing good to you always, irrespective of how your reading of the situation might be, then you will be expressing gratitude always. So irrespective of what happens to you in life, you should be able to express gratitude to God. That is what is true surrender. In fact, Swami would say in Telugu that you should always think, idi na manchi kosame, idi na manchi kosame. You know, Prem, by Swami's grace, recently I had a baby girl, and when I had to take her to the hospital for the vaccination, It's quite brutal. The needle is almost half the size of her arm, her tiny little arm. And they poke the needle in. It's so painful for the baby. And the baby wails. It wails and cries. And you know, when the baby wails and cries, both me and my wife, we also feel the pain in our heart. But you know, it's not as if we don't love the baby. We know that that's going to be good for you, dear one. You know, it's good for you. It'll insulate you from so many future problems.
Right.
That is why I'm allowing this lady to poke you like that. That's what we feel. And seeing that, you know, I just felt that needle is the problem and we are like the baby. Our understanding is not complete. We just wail out in pain. The Lord also might be thinking that, you don't worry, my dear one. This is going to protect you. You have no idea. This is for your good. It is causing you pain, I know, but it's for your good. So I feel in devotion, you know, that's that baby, it's veiled, it knows that I put it in front of the nurse to poke it. But you know, 5 minutes later, Prem, when I pick it up and console and say, don't worry, it's all fine. The baby, it's so beautiful, that feeling. She embraces my neck and she's silent and she's somewhat pacified. It seems so magical, you know. Here is a guy who ditched you, who cheated you, who got a needle poked into you. Yet in 10 minutes you are able to forgive and forget and hug and embrace the same person. I feel if we can be like that baby, that is so beautiful, because we are like the baby in terms of our understanding. It's only the logic that makes us feel that God is very cruel. God, I'll embrace you and love you back again, but tell me why you did this to me. Because you have done something wrong to me. That is, I feel, not right on our part, because we are not wise. We can't understand even if God wishes to explain. Because our understanding is like that of the baby. So that is where I feel in bhakti we should just accept. And that is where surrender comes in. If there is no surrender, if there is no acceptance, if there is no equanimity, then it is not bhakti at all. I feel this we can use as a rule of the thumb to evaluate our own devotion. How equanimous we are. How much surrender we have done to the Lord. How much are we able to be grateful to the Lord irrespective of what happens in our life. That shows a measure of our devotion, and that shows whether we are moving towards full-time devotion or not.
The very statement that you did, you know, I think each one of us face that when we go through life, where you say, you know, after a situation, after a problem, you say, Swami, whatever happens is alright for me. Whatever you give me is fine. You know, that's of course mandatory in a devotion, in the path of devotion. You see everything that comes your way as sent by Swami, the pleasant, unpleasant, painful, joyous, everything is sent by Swami. And we are talking about a situation where you say, Swami, whatever comes my way, whatever you send me is acceptable, because whatever you do is good for me. Till the point where we have both these statements, you know, where you say that, Swami, whatever you send me is okay, because whatever you do is good for me. I think there is a moment where we shout and then we come back and we pacify. Till we come to the understanding that, you know, in what way is this good for me? Either we understand that or we accept that. Most times we see it, you know, when there's a problem, a month or two later you look back and you say, okay, that's why this happened. Now, that is the reason why it happened. That reasoning gives you a little bit of peace and calm. Or you accept it completely. Okay, I mean, there might be a reason, I don't understand it, I accept it. I think at some point, that second part of that phrase just drops off. You know, where you say, Swami, whatever you send me is acceptable. I'm not bothered about it's good for me or not good for me. I mean, I'm not even going there. I think at that time, there is no back and forth. you're all the time accepting whatever comes.
Hmm.
You know, there is no, is this good or bad? Or in what way is this good? You
Correct.
Don't even take that time to reason out. So I think when we talk about...
You will be convinced that it is good.
Right. You know, when you talk about the great devotees, when you talk about devotees like Meera, when you talk about devotees like Tyagaraja, I think there they don't go to that second half of the statement at all. In what way is this good for me? Oh, I've got this problem. In what way is this good? You know, this Rana is giving me this poison. In what way is this good? Hmm. Probably these devotees whom we extol never went to that part of the statement. They stopped at, it's come to me from God and it's always acceptable because what comes from God is always prasadam. You know, it's acceptable.
You know, Prem, maybe that you know, it's time for concluding. So, I'm reminded of one little story that I read.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful. It shows the power of bhakti. This is related to a Nayanar. They used to call him Appar Nayanar. Appar means father.
Okay, right.
Appar Nayanar. So, he apparently had a devotee at Tangalur.
Mm-hmm.
A village in Tamil Nadu, and this devotee loved his master, this Nayanar, so much that he started many businesses and many little hotels, everything after the name Appar. Appar Hotel, Appar Cloth Shop, Appar this, Appar that, everything after Appar, 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 and he has not met Appar Nayanar ever in his life. It so happened that once when Appar Nayanar came to this village, it was not a surprise to anybody that he was hosted by this devotee at Tangalur.
Mm-hmm.
So this devotee took him home and, you know, he wanted to be his host and all that.
Mm-hmm.
The story goes that on that day, this devotee's son, he had 4 or 5 children. So one of the sons died. And when he died, as you said, there was no further questioning, why is this happening to me? Or is this is good for me? How is this good for me? Nothing. He just felt that that should not come in the way of him serving his master,
right.
His guru, Appar Nayanar. So what he does is he just buries him under some dry leaves so that he doesn't come in the way, so that he can do the ceremonies later. And without a trace of sorrow, without a hint of anything, just goes about serving his guru. And then the story goes that in the end, Appar Nayanar tells him, I'm very happy with your service. Call all your family members and come. And nobody except him knows that all his family members are not there because one son is dead. But legend is that when the family was summoned like this, the dead son too came walking to take namaskar from Appar Nayanar. And at that time, again, you know, this devotee at Tangalur, there were no tears of joy, there was no celebration, whoo, wow, everything. Because once again, without a moment's hesitation, he had accepted this as another gift from his guru. The death was a gift, the life is also a gift. And then, you know, the story goes that the guru said that this son of yours coming back to life, Appar Nayanar says that him coming back to life is not proof of my shakti, but it is proof of your bhakti. You know, that is the power of bhakti. And that is bhakti in true sense. As you said, there is no questioning at all. There is not just silent acceptance, there is a kind of a silent celebration because everything is prasadam from the Lord.
Even as you say this, it's sometimes really funny that when we talk about stories, when you talk about experiences, most often the complete experiences get the recognition. Like in this, the Nayanmar story which you said about, I think that Nayanmar's, he also becomes one of the Nayanmars in the Periyapuranam.
Oh, the devotee.
The devotee. I think he's called Aputi Adigal or something like that.
Hmm.
Tirunavakarasar's devotee also gets the same recognition.
You
know, there was one story I heard from one of the devotees. This person was the district president or in Swami's organization. You know, there was a organization meeting at his house scheduled on one particular day. Right? And on that day, this person's son-in-law passed away. And this devotee had, you know, no qualms about it. You know, he just took the son-in-law, locked him up in one of the rooms, and the meeting continued as nothing happened in that house. Apparently, after the meeting was over, after the lunch and the dinner, whatever, for all the office bearers were over, somebody just asked, you know, where's your son-in-law? I mean, we've not met him. And that is when they came to know that that morning, you know, that person had a heart attack and he passed away. And this person just covered it up so that he said, no, this is Swami's work. It had to go on. And unlike this Nayanmar story, that person did not come back to life. But the devotion was equal. You know, I think a perfect time to way to conclude is, it's again not in our devotion. You know, we had Swami who could inspire such devotion in us. You know, you and I probably would not sit here and talk about such devotees. And, you know, what we do may be categorized as kirtanam. You know, when you speak, I'm doing shravanam, and I speak, you're doing kirtan. You know, shravanam, and I'm doing kirtanam. But we wouldn't be doing this if not for some strong, I mean, this very, very strong presence like Swami. Because Swami can inspire such devotion in all of us. And we have that opportunity. So dear listeners, when you're talking about all these forms of devotions, when we talk about all these devotees, we are living in a time where we have the opportunity to live such devotion, to express such devotion. I think we should be really, really grateful to Swami for that.
One final point, Prem, when you said that only the successful example see the light of the day, I just felt that that is also possibly our weakness, because we want to look at it saying that, hey, you know what, some good comes out of it, don't worry.
Right.
That is also our weakness of looking at the Provident Fund and the pension benefits.
You know, I'll give you selfless devotion, but just tell me what I'll get at the end of it.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, actually, that's also our own weakness. But I think, as Swami would say, I don't want you to totally give up desires. Replace the lower desire with a higher desire.
Swami doesn't say, I'll wait till you become perfect.
Exactly.
Swami is there with us all through the way, even when we are imperfect.
So, I feel it's a lesser imperfection than the other imperfection.
Absolutely.
So, we continue along with that. And dear listeners, this is what we will be taking up. One fortnight, we will have the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini. On the other fortnight, we will, after this introduction to bhakti, possibly we will introduce Navveda Bhakti and then take up each one of those forms, Shravanam, Kirtanam, because Swami has dilated at length on each one of those, and it's so beautiful. It would be sanctifying for both of us here to be able to take part in this beautiful Bhakti Yagna. We invite you also to be part of this. On every alternate fortnight, we will continue with the Bhakti Yagna, and the alternate fortnights we will have the Ramkatha Rasa Vahini. With that, dear listeners, we will bring this afternoon satsang to a close, offering our gratitude to Swami, praying that He imparts us with true bhakti for His lotus feet. We will end with this.
Right, we'll end with one more song from that same collection which we said, because this is from Dubai, UAE. It's sent to us by a devotee. The composer's name is Shyam. A very, very beautiful song. I think it's a beautiful song to end this satsang in. We offer this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet. On the other side of the song, as always, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program, Love to Love.